Chapter 3. Horse Tracks and a Long Shot. The colonel turned back with the inspector, while Holmes and I walked slowly across the moor. The sun was beginning to sink behind the stables of Mapleton. As we walked, my companion was sunk in the deepest thought. "It's this way, Watson," he said at last. "We may leave the question of who killed John Straker for now. More important now is to find out what has become of the horse. Where could he have gone? The horse is a very social creature. If left to himself, he would have naturally either returned to King's Pyland or gone over to Mapleton. Why should he run wild on the moor? He would surely have been seen by now. And why should gypsies steal him? They could not hope to sell such a horse. They would run a great risk and gain nothing by taking him. Where is he, then? I have already said that he must have gone to King's Pyland or to Mapleton. He is not at King's Pyland. Therefore, he is at Mapleton. This part of the moor, as the inspector remarked, is very hard and dry, but it falls away toward Mapleton. You can see from here that there is a long hollow over there, which must have been very wet on Monday night. If our guess is correct, then the horse must have crossed that. There is the point where we should look for his tracks." A few more minutes walking brought us to the hollow in question. I walked down the bank to the right. Holmes walked to the left. In less than 5 minutes, I heard him give a shout. I quickly crossed to where he stood. The track of a horse was plainly outlined in the soft earth in front of him. The shoe which he took from his pocket exactly fitted the impression. "See the value of imagination," said Holmes. "We imagined what might have happened, acted on the idea, and find ourselves correct. Let us proceed." We continued walking over a quarter of a mile of dry, hard ground. Again the ground sloped, and again we came on the tracks. Then we lost them for half a mile, but only to pick them up once more, quite close to Mapleton. A man's tracks were also visible there beside the horses. "The horse was alone before," I cried. "Quite so. It was alone before. Hello, what is this?" The double tracks turned sharp off and took the direction of King's Pyland. Holmes whistled, and we both followed along after it. His eyes were on the trail, but I happened to look to one side. There I saw the same tracks coming back in the opposite direction. "One for you, Watson," said Holmes when I pointed it out. "Let us follow the return tracks." We had not to go far. It ended at a road which led up to the gates of the Mapleton stables. As we approached, a trainer ran out from them.
"We don't want any strangers about here," he said.
"I only wish to ask a question," said Holmes. "Will Mr. Silas Brown be home to see me if I call at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning?" Just then, a fierce-looking elderly man marched out from the gate with a hunting crop swinging in his hand.
"What's this, Dawson?" he cried. "No wasting time. Go about your business. And you, what the devil do you want here?"
10 minutes talk with you, my good sir," said Holmes in the sweetest of voices.
"I've no time to talk to every stranger. Be off, or you may find a dog after you."
Holmes leaned forward and whispered something in the trainer's ear. He started violently and became red in the face.
"It's a lie," he shouted.
"Very good. Shall we argue about it here in public, or talk it over in your living room?"
"Oh, come in if you wish to."
Holmes smiled. "I shall not be more than a few minutes, Watson," he said. "Now, Mr. Brown, let us go in." It was 20 minutes before Holmes and the trainer reappeared. Silas Brown's face was pale and beads of sweat shone on his forehead. His hands shook with the hunting crop still held in them. He walked along at my companion's side like a dog with its master.
"Your instructions will be done. It shall all be done," he said.
"There must be no mistake," said Holmes, looking around at him. The other bowed his head as he read the warning in his eyes.
There shall be no mistake. It shall be there. Should I change it first or not?
Holmes burst out laughing. No, don't, he said. I shall write to you about it. No tricks now, or...
Oh, you can trust me. You can trust me.
Yes, I think I can. Well, you shall hear from me tomorrow. He turned, and we set off for King's Pyland. He has the horse, then? I asked as we walked along together. He tried to shout his way out of it. However, I had guessed the whole thing. You observe the square toes in the prints. His own boots exactly corresponded to them. I described to him how, while out early one morning, he found a strange horse wandering over the moor. He went up to it and recognized it as Silver Blaze. Here was his main competitor in the cup race. Then I described how his first thought had been to lead him back to King's Pyland. However, the devil had shown him how he could hide the horse until the race was over. Thus, he had led it back and hid it at Mapleton. When I told him every detail, he gave up the fight and thought only of saving his own skin. But his stables had been searched. Oh, a man like him has many a trick he can use. But are you not afraid to leave the horse in his power now? My dear fellow, he will guard it as the apple of his eye. He knows that his only hope of mercy is to produce it safe. Colonel Ross did not impress me as a man who would be likely to show much mercy in any case. The matter does not rest with Colonel Ross. I follow my own methods. That is the advantage of not being part of the police. I don't know whether you observed it, Watson, but the Colonel's manner has been just a bit too proud. I am of a mind now to have a little amusement at his expense. Say nothing to him about the horse.
Of course.
And of course, this is all a minor point compared to the question of who killed John Straker.
And you will devote yourself to that?
On the contrary, we both go back to London by the night train. I was quite surprised by my friend's words. We had only been a few hours in Devonshire. Not a word more could I draw from him until we were back at the trainer's house. The colonel and the inspector were awaiting us in the living room. My friend and I returned to town by the night express, said Holmes. The colonel's lip curled in a clever smile.
So you despair of arresting the murderer of poor Straker, he said.
Holmes simply raised his shoulders. I have every hope. However, I am sure that your horse will start on Tuesday. I beg that you will have your rider ready. Might I ask for a photograph of Mr. John Straker? The inspector took one from an envelope and handed it to him. My dear Gregory, you predict all my wants. Now I have a question which I would like to put to the maid. Holmes left the room, but returned after only a minute or two. Now, gentlemen, he said, I'm quite ready for Tavistock. As we stepped into the carriage, one of the stable boys held the door open for us. A sudden idea seemed to occur to Holmes. He leaned forward and touched the boy's sleeve. You have a few sheep in the field, he said. Who attends to them?
I do, sir.
Have you noticed anything strange with them of late?
Well, sir, three of them have gone lame.
I could see that Holmes was extremely pleased. He laughed quietly and rubbed his hands together. A long shot, Watson, a very long shot, he said. Gregory, let me recommend to your attention this strange problem among the sheep. Drive on, my good man.
You consider the sheep to be important?
The inspector asked. Quite.
Is there any other point to which you wish to draw my attention?
To the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime.
The dog did nothing in the nighttime, said the inspector.
That was the curious incident, remarked Sherlock Holmes.